Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, through which country do Cuban Jews have to go now if they want to make Aliyah to Israel? Linda Hirsch is a photographer and psychologist from Sudbury, Massachusetts, where she's a member of Congregation Bethel. Although for decades travel to Cuba was severely restricted for Americans, members of this congregation and other Jewish groups received special permission from the United States government to visit Jewish communities there for the purpose of engaging in religious activities. After her first trip to Cuba in 2001, Linda volunteered to coordinate Bethel's project known as Cuba Connection, which provides assistance in different areas to Jewish communities there. Since 2009, we've spoken with Linda several times about the Jewish community in Cuba, the projects she's helped to develop there, and how the community has evolved. This week, she tells us about what she found on her most recent trip in November 2019, a special celebration she attended, and how the community is coping with the COVID-19 crisis. Well, thank you very much for speaking with us today, Linda. It's a pleasure to speak with you again after all these years. First, you told me that you had been to Cuba in November, recently the last time, and I was wondering if you could tell us something about the conditions you found there and the changes that there have been there since 2015, which is the last time we spoke.
Well, first, I want to thank you again for this opportunity, because it's wonderful to be able to share personal firsthand experience. So this last trip was my eighth since 2001, and it was the first since December 2014. I went in December, and the week after I got home, Obama and his entourage arrived and the door was opened. So in the past 5 years, there have been many changes, primarily due to the change in our government's policies, the reversal going backwards to the embargo. So the door was closed for most forms of trade, enablement, assistance. And it was very palpable, it was very visible on the ground in Havana, as well as throughout the countryside where my husband and I traveled. So the major changes that were obvious, both the up and the downside, tourism was way down. People were feeling reluctant to go to Cuba because of the uncertainty of policies. There was a lot of on-the-ground talk from the Airbnb and Casa Particulares, the owners of them, that they were seeing a huge drop. This was way before COVID-19 was obvious. It was before it was obvious. So anyway, tourism was way down. The streets were empty. I have pictures of empty streets throughout Havana. This was just before the 500th anniversary celebration.
Well, let me ask you something. When you're talking about tourism, are you talking about American tourism? Because I think that there has always, or for a long time, been tourism to Cuba from Europe.
Yes, it was not just American. Thank you for allowing me to clarify that. It was not just American tourism. That was the biggest drop, was from North America. But other people from other countries were equally nervous, and our CASA hosts, with whom we've had a long-standing relationship both in Havana and Cienfuego, they all acknowledged that foreign visitors also, the numbers had dropped. There was just a general discomfort and unease and uncertainty that really was rippling way beyond our shores. So tourism was affected. The hotels on the upside, many gorgeous, I mean stunning, new hotels have been built in the past 5 years because the Cubans were hopeful and anticipating that now that when the doors were opened by Obama, they went and set up businesses, restaurants, built new hotels, and they were sitting empty. Empty, just so depressing to see these gorgeous buildings and the restaurants and the usual tourist places also just empty. So I took a fair number of photos to document that. And the other changes, also due to U.S. policy reversals, were the shortages of fuel, because Venezuela is a mess. Venezuela was the primary source of fuel in exchange for Cuban doctors. So fuel was in short demand and short supply. Food supplies were visibly obvious. Everyone still has their ration cards, but they're not getting as much food. There isn't enough food in the markets. So even the restaurants, which over the years have gone up and down in what they can provide, were feeling the pinch. So fuel was obviously short, fewer cars on the road, fewer tourists using the cars and the taxis, and the food visibly absent. Staple goods, which were snapped up after the last hurricane and bad storms, were also in short supply and high demand. So people who had sustained damage from the tornado, if you recall, there was a tornado that hit Havana a few years back. People still haven't repaired their homes because they can't get the goods with which to do that. So that was Havana. Out in the countryside, we traveled out through Abreu's into Cienfuegos and to Santa Clara. All of those areas, whether they were remote farms or bustling cities like Cienfuegos and Santa Clara, the same things were obvious. Lack of tourists, shortages of fuel, food, staple items. Everybody was really feeling the belt tightening. So that was before COVID-19 was obvious.
In November, did you find any changes, aside from what you've just said about the economy, were there any changes in the Jewish community?
In November, we actually, one of the primary reasons for going was to attend a bat mitzvah of a granddaughter of a communal leader. I'll come back to that in a moment. The greater Jewish community in November had shrunk, continues to shrink, but more slowly now. A lot of the Jews in 2015 and the next few years, there were increasing numbers of Jewish Cubans making aliyah to Israel, emigrating to Israel and to the U.S. primarily. And in those years, before our latest administration in the U.S. and before other changes, aliyah was easy. It was relatively, if not totally free, paid for by Jewish agency, and Canada was involved, and that has all stopped. It's like a door was slammed shut. Not by Cuba per se, but Canada has been under increasing pressure not to help Cubans in general, even though they still have relations. The Jewish contacts up there just disappeared. They're not doing what they had been. And so that emigration, which had been shrinking the Jewish population, has slowed. And when I asked one of the Jewish leaders in Havana, actually, it was the Sephardic leader, Myra Levy, Dr. Myra Levy. She runs the Centro Sephardi. She gave me a strange answer. I said, why is Aliyah suddenly so difficult, and why have the numbers dropped? And she said, it used to be the Jews went through Canada or Mexico or other countries to Israel. And now, her response was that now, people making aliyah have to go through Russia and be helped by the Russians to get to Israel. And once they get to Israel, then they're reimbursed for any expenses. I mean, the whole story was so crazy. And I've asked several other people, and I've gotten similar answers, which to me make no sense. So aliyah has been made much more difficult. And I don't really know. I can't honestly answer whether Cuba is making it more difficult, or whether it's the external pressure by the U.S. on all these other countries to just not deal with Cuba. I take an educated guess, but I won't state categorically that it's that Cuba is making it more difficult. I think our policies have definitely affected Aliyah, and that's wreaking havoc. So I think I hope I've answered your question. It was happening. The Jewish population was rapidly decreasing. There were many conversions, people in Cuba who were interfaith married or not of the Jewish faith converted, which took a lot of commitment, a lot of study, and they had to pass exams. All of those have really slowed to a trickle. And so all the hopes, again, that people had of moving more freely out of Cuba to be with family elsewhere, those have been really dashed. And the effect is devastating, because I'm in touch with all of these people, and the depression is, and the fear is still very real. I visit kids in Israel now. When I visit, I have family in Israel, and I visit some of the Cuban youths, and I'm in touch with them. And they don't want their names used. When they're interviewed, they will give me information, but they're still very fearful, mostly of what the Cuban government might learn and the implications for their family. So it's really quite chilling that these fears are now exacerbated even further by the virus.
Well, tell us about the bat mitzvah.
Okay, so thank you for bringing me back full circle. The communities of San Fuego and Santa Clara and Sancti Spiritus and Kyberian all were once major centers of Jewish culture and activity. The only one that has a shul is the one in Santa Clara. And because of the shrinkage of the population, the leaders of those four communities have not only lost communal members to Israel, the U.S., or aging and dying, so they've all joined together in a collaboration and used the shul in Santa Clara as their base of ritual and simchas and all the life events. And the leader, Sancti Spiritus, Daisy Bernal Barlia, she, and I've known her for years, and this was her youngest, well, this was her, had been her youngest granddaughter until a new baby arrived recently. So this had been her youngest granddaughter, and now, boom, a beautiful young woman. And the bat mitzvah was held, not in Sancti Spiritus, because there's no shul there. Services are run in the home of Daisy. They went to Santa Clara, and it was beautiful. The most unique aspect of the bat mitzvah was the presence of four rabbis, four American rabbis. The lead, the one who coordinated the entire service, was Rabbi Sonny Schnitzer of Bethesda, Maryland. He has taken over the leadership of the Cuba-American Jewish mission, known as CAJM. So Sonny ran the show. He brought a busload of people, almost exclusively, or not, okay, mostly from Bethesda, but there were others from Massachusetts whom we met, fellow Massachusetts people, and a few other states. And the three rabbis, one was from New York, one was from Western Mass, and the other was from another state, which I can't recall. So they were, of the four rabbis, two were women and two were male. One was gender unspecific, so I should be more cautious. It was a nice range of ages and gender. And they ran the entire service so beautifully, Friday evening and Saturday morning. There were different services. And it was, you would not have known, if you had landed there from another planet or another country, you would not have known about the shortages or the despair or the frustration, because it was a true simcha, a true celebration of this lovely young woman, her growth, her maturity, her knowledge of Hebrew, which took a lot of work and mentoring by Sonny Schnitzer and by David Tasher, who is the fellow who runs the community. He's the president of Santa Clara. So this young woman had mastered all the basics and did a beautiful job. And the attendees filled a tiny, tiny renovated shul in Santa Clara. And then there was a celebration complete with the usual food. So they had gotten a lot of donations. Sonny raises money, the other rabbis brought money, and everybody who has any connection to the Jewish community in Cuba has sent money one way or another. So they actually were able to supply a full routine Shabbat dinner to the approximately 60, 70 people. It was a beautiful, beautiful celebration. And there were gifts given, meaningful, lasting gifts. And you would not have known that this was during a time or in a country where hardship is routine. There were tears, there was dancing, there was guitar playing by the rabbis who were folkies and friends from way back. So it was filled with warmth. And this is what they need. They need to sustain, and they are sustaining, their roots, their rites, and their rituals in a very beautiful way. But it's sad also, because most of the community from Sancti Spiritus and most of the community from Cienfuego were not there. Normally, there are people from all over the country gather. The Jews come by train, by car, by bus. In the past, there have been many more attendees. Even in the small shul, they somehow managed to fit people from all over. Not this time. Nobody except a handful of representatives from Cienfuego and even from Sancti Spiritus, where this child is from. That was truly sad.
Why is that?
Well, again, going back, there was the fuel shortage. There wasn't enough fuel. There aren't enough cars. Most people in Cuba still do not own cars. You know, you see the tourism, old, you know, beautiful painted cars. That's rare. But most of the citizens don't own cars. And it's too far to go by bike. And there was fuel shortages for the buses even. So they couldn't get there. They just, mm-hmm. they couldn't get there. And they're not hooked up to Wi-Fi like in this country. We can do Zoom simchas and shivas and everything. Not in Cuba. Their Wi-Fi is way too expensive and the bandwidth is too narrow and they use satellite feed. So that's not an option. That is not an option. So they had to rely on my sharing of pictures and videos and the representatives bringing back the stories.
So then most of the people who were there were the people from the States.
I know, the irony was abundant. Well, I mean, that, just think about that. What the, here we have a government that doesn't want people going or trading with or interacting with, but it's still legal. I should make this absolutely clear. Absolutely clear. It is still perfectly legal and feasible. Well, except now the door is closed because of COVID-19. But before the virus, and back in November when we went, it was totally permitted and legal under many categories by the U.S. OFAC, Office of the Treasury. You didn't need a license. You just needed to check off something on a visa form saying that you met one of the specs. And in our case, it was instant. Religious, boom, in. You know, the propaganda, and I do need to use that word, unfortunately, propaganda from the U.S. side of the U.S.-Cuba Straits, the Florida Straits, has really discouraged people unnecessarily. Before the virus, Americans absolutely were allowed to go. Only one category was changed, and I could go on and on. So the irony was abundant. Yes, the shul was filled with Americans. There were a handful of people from, as I repeat, Kyberian, Cienfuego, and Santa Clara, but very few from Sancti Spiritus. I should clarify that Friday evening's service was held in the home of Daisy, the aforementioned leader of Sancti Spiritus. Her home is lovely and gracious. And so Rabbi Sonny and his busload of tourists and the other rabbis gathered with her community in Sancti Spiritus. So that was the closest they got to celebrating. But they didn't see the young woman read from the Torah. They didn't feel the joy and the reality of the service firsthand on Saturday. But yeah, the irony was just, it was heartbreaking. Thank you for asking that.
Well, you mentioned the virus a couple of times. Let's talk a little bit about how Cuba is doing with the virus, because Cuba is known for having a very good healthcare system. And I was wondering how it's been addressing the pandemic, if you can just kind of briefly give an overview and an update and tell us if the people are in lockdown the way the rest of us are.
Okay, so there has been a total lockdown. Starting in early March, I started getting emails from a cousin of mine who lives there, and she has allowed to identify her. Her name is Susanna Hurlick, H-U-R-L-I-C-K. She's an American-Canadian dual citizen who is an anthropologist and a researcher living and working in Cuba for over 30 years. She's seen a lot of history, a lot of hard times. She has been providing data in addition to the Jewish leaders, because they're Cubanos, also representatives of Caritas Cubana, which is an organization that provides health and human services and aid to disabled children and elders, various reps from that organization, which is based in the U.S. but comes and goes from Cuba. They've been a source. And then I have other various individuals around the country have been emailing me with their fears, their hopes. And yes, the schools are closed, the synagogues are closed, everything is closed except, as here, the markets, which are pretty empty, and the pharmacies. And I'm not even sure about the major pharmacies and the Jewish synagogues. I'm not sure even those are open. That I don't know yet. So everything has stopped. And the three pillars of Cuban society, of Cubanidad, faith, family, and community, have really helped sustain the people. They are truly locked down except to go to the market and the pharmacy. They're not supposed to be out in the streets. They're supposed to be under lock and key. But Cubans are very social animals, as we all know, and it's been very hard for them. So they're doing what everyone in Italy and other countries even here are doing in the U.S. They're out on their balconies. They're out on their porches and stairs singing and dancing and playing their music and applauding the doctors who come and go. And I don't know the impact on their hospitals, but I'm guessing it's, the numbers aren't as high as here because they really, really shut everything down. But the biggest communal effort that I'm hearing about, and this is truly astonishing, my cousin is receiving a medication, a homeopathic medication that volunteers are going door to door to every single Cuban household, as they used to do for dengue fever, but now they're doing it for COVID, and they're distributing not just homeopathic medication, they're gathering statistics. They have sheets of paper that people fill out. Who's getting what, when, what is the effect, and they're really tracking the efficacy of this homeopathic medication, which is not a vaccine, but it boosts the immune system. They're also working on vaccines very, very actively.
Are these people who've been tested, or they're just people who are?
No, they're going door to door to every single Cuban citizen. This is an amazing effort that only a country like Cuba can really carry out, because they're accustomed to doing this. They're accustomed to emergencies and preparedness and person-to-person checkups. I mean, literally, a lot of the CDRs, the communal groups that had been very active in post-revolutionary days, which sort of lapsed and came back and ebbed and flowed, they're back in business. They're calling on all of the healthy volunteers they can get. And so the essence of comunidad, is this outreach and tracking. They're gathering statistics. And as I said, they're working on vaccines. There was recently a PBS show about another vaccine. They're with lack of equipment and lack of technology, these people have been able to carry on their lives and carry out research. And they've offered doctors throughout the world, and the U.S. has refused them. The U.S. has put pressure on other countries to refuse aid from Cuba in terms of medical training, trained doctors and nurses. It's just the ironies continue to abound.
Now, when you're speaking about this, are you including the very poor, the disabled, and the marginalized? I imagine that they must have homeless people there the way everybody else does.
Yes.
Where are these people getting help from?
Okay, thank you for asking that, because one of the organizations I listed was Caritas Cuba, C-A-R-I-T-A-S, Caritas Cuba.
Caritas
yes.
is an organization of the Catholic Church.
Yes, but they are not discriminating against other faith groups. They have helped me with my Jewish enablement, which has been absolutely lovely. We help each other. We help each other. So they specifically work with disabled children, children with autism, other disabilities, HIV, AIDS. They do counseling. They provide funding for counseling. They provide funds for meals and daycare of at-risk children. Abuse under times of hardship is evident everywhere in the world. They provide funds for food and water and other services, not only for COVID-impacted families, but for anyone they can get the funds and the help to. That the elderly and the disabled are their targets. And I would say in Cuba, the issue of homelessness is very minimal because, as I pointed out earlier, the essence of Cubanidad is faith and family and community, and they take care of each other. They look after each other. You don't see people lying in the street, on the pavement, in the gutters in Cuba. You see very, very poor. You do see very poor people, especially in Habana Vieja and out in the countryside. But homelessness is not as big a concern. They have very strong faith. And one of my friends on a farm out in Abreus, who's in constant touch with me, you know, we pray together, we meditate together. I know her whole family, and there are many people with diabetes and asthma throughout the country, and cancer, very high rates of cancer and asthma. And they're very fearful, but Caritas helps whomever they can reach, through the church primarily, yes, but they do network with Jewish agencies. I know that they have helped me, and through me, others. And then there's LAWG, Latin American Working Group, based in Washington, is spearheading, once again, the effort to get legislation passed and protests increased about our terrible stranglehold on Cuba, which is also playing out in Venezuela. It's one big world, one big system, and we are all connected. So there's no group that's doing just Jewish or just Catholic or just any one sector. We're all trying to work together. Unfortunately, now we can only wire money from the U.S. through Canada. We can't deliver the funds. We can't deliver the aid because everything has been shut down.
Has the Jewish community been affected in any way that is different from the Cubans at large, or are they just suffering the same as everybody else?
Well, again, this is my impression with some input from some of the aforementioned people. I'd say that the Jewish Cubans who have remained in Cuba and not made Aliyah, not left for the States, they're in a better position than your average Cuban because, thankfully, they can still get remittances from family in the States and in Israel and other places. The people who own the casas who are Jewish, they get help from people who have been their loyal guests for years, I being one of them, send them whatever we can. Now, we can't do it directly, of course, but we're sending it in other ways through Israel and through wired funds. And I would say the biggest impact on the Jewish population, which is different from the general population, is the closing of the synagogues. There's no Hebrew schools. There's no activities. There's nothing to sustain, you know, community of that nature. When you're in a synagogue and you're doing crafts and art and language and dance, they have all these wonderful therapies and lessons that are closed. So the elders are taking the hardest hit, not just in the Cuban population, but amongst the Jews. I documented gorgeous programs, physical therapies, occupational therapy, exercise, music, dance, everything you can imagine, and that's gone. And they can't, as I said, they can't just tune into one another online, but they were accustomed to. So for a socially networked country to be separated in this way is just, it's hard on all of them, but for the Jews, I mean, that's how a lot of the elders were getting meals, that they were getting fed at the synagogues, and all of that is closed.
But this wasn't the case with the population in general? I mean, they must have closed all the schools and community centers and churches. And
yep, but a lot of people in Cuba didn't get their meals like the Jewish elders did at their synagogues.
Uh-huh.
All three of the Jewish synagogues, one of them had a kosher butcher, the descendant of a kosher butcher, runs the Orthodox shul. So that shul, the Sephardic one and the conservative one, the big El Patronato, also known as Beit Shalom, all three of those had food that they gave the elders. And I don't know what the churches did. I'm sure they gave some food to their parishioners, but most of the Cubans didn't get their food that way. And the pharmacies, as I said, there were pharmacies in the Sephardic shul and the El Patronato. I have a feeling if the sanctuaries are closed, that the pharmacies are closed as well, and that's devastating.
Mm-hmm.
That's devastating because these people need their meds, and I have to find out how that's being handled.
We're really kind of running out of time. Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
I would like to add a blessing, actually. I think this is a very appropriate time, and this is coming straight from my Jewish roots and from my meditation training, mindfulness meditation training. My blessing, my wish for the world, and especially for our Cuban brothers and sisters of whatever faith, is that they be safe, that they remain well, and that they retain their faith and hope for the future. I say that from the depths of my heart. I really feel that on top of hardship, they're experiencing this threat, and may they come out, may we all come out at the other end, strong and resilient. So, Linda, thank you. I that's all I can add at this point.
Thank you so much. And if you'd like to hear our previous programs with Linda, we're including links on our webpage. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you. So please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirah.com. See you next week.